All right, everyone. Hello, good morning, good night, wherever you are in the world. This is Sandow Podcast number 58. And today I have a special guest with me, Ayumi from Women in Tech. And as you can see, the bumper sticker there, on a mission to empower 5 million women and girls by 2030. So the scope of the talk is a meet and greet with Ayumi to learn about her, Women in Tech, and the SIP that is in discussion right now. Is also a learning opportunity because Women in Tech has been involved in the sandbox, especially if you've seen some of the collaborations that's happened over the years. So we'll get in a little bit into that. So Ayumi and I, we do not represent the Sandbox Game or the Sandbox Foundation. We're not your financial or legal advisors, and nothing we say is to be taken as financial or legal advice. When we say the word SIP, we mean Sandbox Improvement Proposal. When we say the word DAO, we mean Decentralized Autonomous Organization. And when we use the word SANFAM, we're talking about the Sandbox community and those who participate in the people, product, and purpose of this Sandbox ecosystem. That ecosystem looks a little bit like this if you're looking on the screen right now. The people, everyone from gamers to Sandbox team, the product, everything from the game client to the DAO, and the purpose, what was originally mentioned in the white paper to and expand on by Seb and Arthur Madrid and Yatsu. All of those things come together and equals the ecosystem. Today, we're talking about the DAO, talking about partners, and I'm your host, Lanzer. Ayumi here is from Women in Tech. And Ayumi, if you wouldn't mind, please introduce yourself and your background.
Sure. Well, thank you for this lovely introduction, Lanzer. So Ayumi Moraoki, I am the founder and the CEO of Women in Tech Global. We are this global organization that I founded back in 2018, headquarters in Paris in France, but we are present all over the world. So we have 62 official chapters. That means in the countries where we have teams and we're doing on the ground work. But we literally have over 300,000 members all over the world, like wow. In all countries of the world. Yeah, 300,000. That's a lot. But yeah, it's exciting. So that's a little bit about me.
And when, so I do some research, and some of the things that I highlighted in your background that I was looking through: tech diplomat, social entrepreneur, and mother of four.
Yeah.
So your eldest is how old?
So my eldest is 24 and my youngest is 7. So I've got 24 as a boy, 20 as a girl. 14, a girl, and then 7, a boy. 2 girls, and 2 boys.
And tech diplomat. So some of the things I pulled out was that you're part of the Tech Diplomacy Forum. You've been...
I am the founder of the Tech Diplomacy Forum.
Founder. Okay, excuse me.
Yes.
You've been a previous TEDx speaker.
Yes, yes.
Part of the Forbes Business Council.
Yes.
A member of UNESCO?
Yeah, I'm part of the advisory board for the gender UNESCO for women and girls in science. For Forbes, yes, I was part of the Forbes Business Council and then one of the 40 women in Forbes last year. And tech diplomat, yes. Yes, that's a new passion. Well, it's been a passion for over maybe for the last couple of years. But I decided to really go further because from my experience firsthand with women in tech, with all these countries around the world and how everything is shifting right now, there's a paradigm shift of international relations, of innovation, AI technology. How could we bring everything together in this rapidly changing world? So this is how tech diplomacy came about. And I'm doing my EDBA, so my executive doctorate degree at the École des Ponts Business School here in France. And one of the topics I am researching on is on tech diplomacy.
And I also read, as you're a doctoral candidate, also AI and international policy was involved?
Yes. Yeah. So everything is involved. So tech diplomacy with AI. So I did my first papers. It was a quantitative research on gender bias in large language models.
Okay. Got it. Yeah. And then how that will shape international policy as well?
So the research was not on international policy, was really to show how there is an existence of gender bias in large language models, especially in the in models like ChatGPT, Perplexity, you know, Gemini. There's not one that doesn't exist. So it was really to give empirical evidence of the fact that there is and how it is seen and what it represents and what impact it can have on society and particularly on women and girls. So that was one. The other papers that I'm working on is mostly on tech diplomacy, on innovation, and how can that can influence international relations as such.
I'm not surprised you made the Forbes list hearing all of this. So not only are you a doctoral candidate and the founder of the Tech Diplomacy Forum and the founder of Women in Tech and a mother of four.
Yeah.
all of these things put together, how do you find the time to do all of it at once?
Oh, you know, I think it's passion and one goes with the other. You know, when I started my doctoral degree a year and a half ago, even the professors were saying, how are you going to be able to put it all together? Mm-hmm. And so, well, first, there's a lot of time instead of just swiping. Also, I don't watch TV besides, you know, maybe half an hour of news or something. Just all the time that you can win, you know, on not watching TV. I also do a lot of traveling. So, you know, when you're in the planes, when you're in the transport, you can do so much. And I think if you're really passionate about, then you always find the time to do research. And what I've been loving about doing my doctorate is that before, like we never have, like time is something that you cannot expand, right? So you just have to then try and make sure that you prioritize things. And if you don't prioritize, there's always something that you have to do. But if you put the priority into it, it's okay, that's not a priority, then someone else will do it for me. Not that someone else will do it for me, but there's always someone that can do that better than you can. Like you can do everything. And then where my time will be most useful is for me to doing my research, you know, doing checking the checking information. And this work that I do for my ETBA really works on my everyday work, whether it's going to be for the Tech Diplomacy Forum or with women in tech, empowering women, you know, proposing things, talking to governments. So this is why it's all interrelated. So it's not like that after time.
I've seen that myself. I don't watch TV either. So most of my time I try to expand that and finding people who do things that are better at it than you. Like that is a real trick to the trade. And I'm not surprised to hear you say that as well, a founder of multiple organizations at this point and having 62 official chapters.
Yes. But I just read a book recently, which was a great book. I read it in December. And honestly, I wish I had read it before. Although it's called Who Not What. Have you read that book?
I haven't read that one, no.
It's called Who Not What. And so many things, like you can say, oh, I need to do that, I need to do that, but I don't know how to. But you don't need to know how. Who not how. And it's exactly this.
For achieving bigger goals through accelerating teamwork. Okay.
Yes. And it's just so, yeah, that's how you can expand things and do more and involve. And there's also the fun part is working in teams. So you always realize that, you know, for someone that's going to be their expertise, they're going to be happy to do it. They're going to do it better than you. And then you don't have to do it. So you can do other things where you're good at and then rely on people that do things that can help you achieve the goal. And everyone is excited about that. So your only role, not only, but is know where it is that you want to do. So you give the vision, then you make your team around and you inspire them to reach that vision, which is a common goal, right? It's not something personal for me, but it's something that's going to be really for the higher community and for the better of the planet. And so if you manage to get them excited, inspired, and that they see what the purpose is, then it's unstoppable because people will want to be part of it because they see how they can be a contributor, how they can help achieve that dream. So it's teamwork, definitely.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, right there is how Ayumi is selected for one of 40 women Forbes for 2023 and is founder of a hugely successful international organization with 62 chapters. That right there is your reasoning. If you that is very well explained. Is that wow?
Yeah, so but say, since it's not me, it's the group. So sure. Each member. Yeah. So I've got my core team, and the core team we've got these regional directors. We have chapter directors, and they each of them have their teams, and then they've got their community, and this is how it goes. You know, it's like the ripple effect. But ripple effect, that really works, because if there's one thing I'm proud and I'm good at, if I can say, is surrounding myself with people that are authentic and positive. Because it only works if you put positive people that genuinely want to do the work, that genuinely believe, you know, in the mission, in the values that you share. One bad person, bad, and I'm saying that it's not aligned, there's no alignment, sure. Toxic energy, it does not work. So you have to be able to remove the people that is no longer aligned, or that's not going in the same direction, and just keep the people that are really pushing it forward and, you know, inspiring the others, and doing it in a genuine, authentic, positive way again. Yeah,
yeah. Definitely. Builds the team, works on the mission, and then we'll find the things that they are good at, and it's just becomes... So Women in Tech, we talked about founded in 2018. Mm. I had that it's spread across 54 countries at this point.
Your
latest opening was Kyrgyzstan, right?
Yes, Kyrgyzstan. It was 10 days ago. It was fabulous.
It was. And
it was fabulous.
I saw the pictures on LinkedIn. And it was just wonderful. I mean, how many people showed up to that? That looked like thousands of people.
Yeah. So first Kyrgyzstan, when you say, oh, you're opening Kyrgyzstan, I said, no, you have to Google. In Google Maps, you know exactly where it is in the world. Mm-hmm. And then I remember going there. We had to cross the border from Kazakhstan to Kyrgyzstan by foot. It was quite a mission. But I love the country.
But you had to get there by foot?
Well, obviously you can fly in, but I had a conference in Kazakhstan in Almaty the day before on the Saturday, we said, well, it's easier. And there were no flights in the evening, and they had to be there in the morning. I said, well, we have to go by car, but the taxi couldn't cross the border, so he had to go back. So he left us on one side of the border, and then we walked the border, and then another taxi picked us up on the other side. And it was a snowing storm. Oh, God, you know, it was like in the movies. It was fun. It was really fun, and everything went out super well. And the next day, sunny, like lots of snow, but sunny. And there were 1,100 people that came to our event on a Sunday morning. Like, God, no, me Sunday morning, I stay in bed, or, you know, I have like a brunch or something. 1,100 people came. We had over 1,500 registrations, but 1,100 came, including the Minister of Economy, of Industry. We had UN Women. We had UN representatives. We had Ambassador of France, of Germany, of Kazakhstan, IT director. And we had the communities from Uzbekistan that came, and from Kazakhstan as well. So the whole of Central Asia was there just for us, just for Women in Tech. Well, not for us, but for what we stand for and what the vision is, you know, to empower, to skill, to give more visibility to those women, especially the students that were there. So it was extremely touching, and it was great.
And that's not the first time I've seen such an illustrious list. I mean, in some cases, I saw former presidents of France and Croatia in attendance in some of your events. It's very well attended.
So former president Kolinda Grabar-Kitarović, so she has attended our event, of Kosovo as well. We're very well connected to governments. We are not part of any, so we're a non-governmental organization, but we know that if you want to move things, you know, we definitely want to work in collaboration with governments. So it facilitates us working, you know, really on the ground, on the grassroots level. We have had the high patronage of President Macron for the past 3 years on the role. We don't get any funding from them. We really like non-governmental independent, but we definitely have the recognition and the moral support and encouragements of many different governments.
Yeah, that's so awesome to see. Oh my gosh. So Women in Tech, for those who don't know, advocacy, I pulled a quote from your website. Advocacy is the core of our mission to drive systemic change in the tech industry. And also the mission is closing the gender gap and empowering women to embrace technology. Mm-hmm. Is there, what would you say is, so the four pillars, that's the part where I wanted to understand a little bit more about. Four pillars and seven sustainable development goals, SDGs.
Yes. So we work on the four pillars so that we can really focus on different things, right? Because to close the gender gap. So today in the workforce, we have 28.2% of the workforce are women globally. And for the past couple of years, it has not changed. Maybe 0.something%, but the figures are moving very slowly and they are still there. And if it was just one main reason of that challenge, it would be easy to fix it. Because if it was just, I don't know, school or whatever. But in fact, we've identified many different things that were challenging for women that don't empower them to come. So first is education. So whether the young girls, I was just at the UNESCO Summit for Women and Girls in Science Day. It was yesterday or the day before. And in fact, there's empirical evidence, there's been research shown that a girl as young as 6 years old already have stereotypes in her mind of what a scientist looks like, and that's a man, right? If you look at AI professionals, there are less than 20% of AI developers. I think 12% AI developers are women. And so it goes from, it comes from this pipeline, from education, whether it's the stereotypes, whether it's, you know, those kind of subjects that girls, they take at school and then afterwards in the graduate university level. In most part of the countries, I say, Lenzer, because in countries, in regions like the Middle East, so I say MENA, whether it's Tunisia, Saudi Arabia, UAE, you find that, in fact, there are many, them even more girls students in STEM subjects, like engineering, than men. It's been like a boom over there. However, when you're going to transforming this talent and getting them into the workforce, that's where it drops. So whether you're in the US, in Saudi Arabia, or in Japan, it drops back to those 20% and 30%, let's say, according to the country. So we have this massive talent that does not go into tech.
And what has your research shown is some of the challenges that you're tackling in that?
Yeah, so we've got the challenges in of stereotypes, of media, of education and skilling. So we have to skill them to be able to come into the workforce. We have to skill them whether they are in a very young age or even once they're out of school, if they want to pivot to come into tech in a later stage in life. They say today every person has at least seven different jobs or careers that they can have in a lifetime, like a cat. And so you can pivot at any time. Second pillar is business. So the workforce, whether you're in corporate world or whether you are in the entrepreneurship world, an entrepreneur, like a startup founder, it's very hard. In the corporate world, it's hard once again because the culture in the tech companies, they are perhaps not as as welcoming as they should be for many different reasons.
Hospitable.
And this you see, not just because I'm saying so, but this you see by the numbers. You know, I like, this is my PhD kind of hat.
Right?
So data shows that there is more, the talent retention for women is much lower than that of men in tech companies. So then and if you go to qualitative research, it says that they don't feel that it feels like a boys' club. Not in all companies, of course, but this is the feeling, and that's why there's less retention and more dropout of women in certain stages of the career, whether it's early stage, afterwards comes motherhood, so many fall out, and then they don't feel encouraged to come back in. So that's stage. And then that's in the corporate world. And then if you are a startup founder or in the entrepreneurship world, it's very hard for women to get funding. So less than 3% of the funding of overall investments go to female-led startups. which is nothing, right? Can you imagine? It's peanuts. So trying to get companies and initiatives and businesses out when you don't have any money, you can have all the energy you want, but at some point you need some cash, right? So that's the difficult part. And then another section is the digital inclusion, digital and social inclusion, because women, they are 30% less likely to have access to internet connection and devices than men. So if you look at, give you an example, in South Africa, in the global south, India, South Africa, in many other countries, especially with the large families, when if you have a large family, you have like one smartphone for the whole family, the girl will be the last one to get, you know, access to it, whether it's for doing their the school homework or to anything. And if they've got a small budget for education, they're going to be privileging the boy, if there's a family like a boys and girls, than the girl, because it's okay, well, she's going to get married, she doesn't need to study, or the boy does.
Got it.
And okay. So there's a lot of, so the social inclusion, we have to support the women to be able to be, to get that education, to get access so that they can be financially independent, right? And then they can make businesses and stuff. So social inclusion is a very important pillar. And for this, we even have learning centers. We have two learning centers in South Africa, one in Cape Town in a township called Philippi Village, where it's like a safe haven where we have computers, we'll have Wi-Fi, and we even give like lunch, you know, sometimes, you know, some food, because it's also a way of retaining, getting the children to come to our center. And I might say girls and boys, it's not because you're a boy, you cannot come. We make sure that we're going to be reaching out to girls so they encourage them to come. Otherwise, they feel that they don't belong. But boys are also welcome, of course. The same as Burundi and in Brazil as well. And the fourth pillar is advocacy. And advocacy in many ways, I've seen, you know, through my career now with Women in Tech, that we can do amazing work on the ground. But if you really want to move things and shift mindsets and go quicker, we have to be not only on the grassroots level, but you also have to be at the top level where decisions are being made with governments, with policymakers, with presidents, so that they can have this brand awareness and they can also support us with policies, right? So we need both. We need to be really on the ground, but we also really need to be speaking to those who are making the laws, so they can see our perspective and fight for our rights.
I can see why Women in Tech is so successful. It's a very well-developed strategy. It's a very well-developed position and what you're focusing on. And some of the impact that I was looking at was, and this segues quite well into the SIP as well, the improvement proposal, skilling with education,
yes,
water to rural Zambia, supporting women entrepreneurs, and involving world leaders, very closely aligned with what you just spoke on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. Everything is connected, right? We can't say, okay, we're just doing this, we're just doing that. We have to do a bit of everything. And because we're not good in everything, that's why we've got teams that are dedicated to different sectors. And in some countries, they're not so involved in, I don't know, like social inclusion. Maybe that's more like for the African countries. And then maybe, for instance, our USA team, they're going to be more working on female entrepreneurship or in influence. So it depends. And it's also very personal, right? Because it's a lot of volunteer work that we have around the world.
Gotcha.
So our leaders, they have to be, you know, really intimately and passionate about what they're going to be doing on the ground, because they're not paid for to do it. So if it, the work that they're really passionate about is going to be skilling, education, that's it. I know that my South African director, she's passionate about like rural areas, because she comes from a rural area. So she's there trying to make a school in a rural area. So it's very personal as well. So they can choose as long as it's aligned in one of our four pillars.
And what was that, the Kids Lab or the Makeathon?
So the Makeathon, we did it in Nigeria. So she's very much into entrepreneurship. So her vest And the Makeathon is really to try to scale the women, but also to make them become, build their businesses. And the Kids Lab, we do it in Cape Verde and in Portugal. These are more like the Portuguese countries. It's a program that they developed, designed from the beginning. So they've implemented it. And oh, I love that one. I love the Kids Lab.
That's so cool. So yeah. The last thing I wanted to go over as our context was the Women in Tech Global Summit. So the summit itself, I mentioned before in different events, you've had former presidents. You mentioned former President Macron.
Yes. It's under his patronage. So he didn't come because he couldn't. But he has given his high patronage, which is very rare. And it's a real token of...
I must not have understood that term when I read it. What does high patronage mean?
High patronage means it's under like his blessings. Like he approves, he supports, like he signs. He says, no, delivered. Okay, go. It's like a certificate. I don't know. It's like saying, okay, this is under our blessings. This is how
it. Got it. Okay. Okay. Because that's
just, it's difficult to get. It's not that just like, oh yeah, you've got high patronage. No, like, you know, it's like a whole thing to get the high patronage of the president.
And you have the next summit coming up here in April in Osaka.
Yes, in Osaka, Japan. And why Osaka? Because this year, 2025, Osaka is going to be hosting the World Expo, Universal Expo 2025, which is an event that only happens every 5 years in a different country. So last time it was in Dubai, this time is Osaka, and in 5 years it's going to be in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia. And so we're going to be part of the expo. So that's like for us, it's also a huge milestone.
I'm seeing here 650 delegates. There's going to be 80 speakers across 3 days.
Yes. 3 days because there is the expo. So it's going to be such a rich content. And also because Osaka, Japan is far for most of the people. So if you go to Osaka, you're not going to go there for like half a day or 1 day or 2 days. We're really putting together this experience so that people can not only discover Japan, but mostly the expo and also our own program, our global summit, which brings together, it's almost like a G20 for us. And it's like our high level summit where we have delegations from our different countries coming together and we have these high level discussions as well.
And the 23 to 25 April in Osaka, Japan, it's fourth annual. And good. So these are some things I wanted to go over before we delve into the SIP itself, because they're very central. As I was reading through the SIP, very central to the things that you're asking and the things that you would like to submit for in the proposal. So what is it that led you to writing a SIP? How did I forget? Your involvement as SANFAM began, as far as I could tell, 2 years ago when you did a collaboration with World of Women and Nabiya?
Yes, Nabiya Studio. Mm.
So you did a collaboration with World of Women and Nabiya to do an experience. And I have it here up now where it was a WOW museum.
Yeah. So the WOW Museum became like the Women in Tech headquarters for a certain time. And it was Nabiya Studio, who's a female-led designer, you know, for games or environments, who did the World of Women, who designed it for us, put it under our color, and where we had activations inside with our community. And that was super successful. And what I loved was really this collaboration between us and the World of Women, because we're all about collaboration. We're not saying, okay, we're going to be changing the world by ourselves. I think the more women-led initiatives, inclusion initiatives, and belonging initiatives that exist around the world, the better they are, because it means that there's a real need. And so collaborating and working with them was a real joy. It was really exciting.
And then all right. So those are some key center context for what we're about to go over next, which was the SIP itself. And it looks like, pull it up here so everyone can see. The SIP is Empowering Women in Web3, a strategic partnership between Women in Tech Global and the Sandbox DAO. Okay. So the first thing I wanted to know about is how this SIP would impact lives. And at this point, I'm just going to go over the questions, even though you've gone over a number of the answers through World of Women, the Global Summit, the reasons why it exists in the first place. And the SIP mentions educational programs in key market areas.
Yes.
How did you come to focus on those key market areas? I see India, Japan, Singapore, Philippines, and Malaysia.
So talking to the community, we've been to different meetups, also in Paris or in Japan. So that was a feedback of the key focus areas or the countries that they would be more interested in, knowing that we are all over the world. So if the target area would change, it's easy for us to change as well. But I think those countries are where there's a lot of sandbox built communities already, and then where we would like to be able to develop to make it even more present through education. We've had similar experiences with other stakeholders in the Web3 industry, mostly like in the blockchain, and I can say like Cardano Foundation, where we are there to, we launched a Cardano Foundation Academy within our own academy. And honestly, And so in a couple of weeks, we already had 5,000 women take courses in the Cardano Foundation Academy, hosted in our platform, right? So there's a real real excitement, a real demand from our community to learn these things. They want to learn. They're eager there. Why do they join us? Because they've got access to mentoring, free access to training, to skilling, and to the community. And that's what women want. They want to belong, they want to learn, and they want to be visible, and they want to create. Those are the main things women want. So this is what we give them. And some are going to be more interested in perhaps in a certain thing, and others are going to be interested in something else. And so many don't know the world of gaming, the world of the sandbox. And this is why we want to give this to them. It's okay. This is, look, have you thought of it? You haven't. If you want to come in, we will help you. We will skill you. We will, take you through it. And you like it, you don't like it, don't. But at least they have the choice and they know it exists. And we give them the tools to belong.
And the tools, the skilling in particular, are some of the things that I see in the SIP here. So you would be teaching them about VoxEdit, GameMaker, what sort of skilling?
So we try to see what skilling does not exist yet or there's not super available, and also how they would like, because we want them to get involved, to learn, but also to be active makers, creators afterwards, right? So to learn what the ecosystem is, how it works, but also propose. So how can they become game makers, creators? How can they do different things? How can they make money, make living out of it, right? How can they do marketing? How can they bring brands? So we want to give them skills, not just to belong, but also to be able to make their business, to develop businesses as well.
Yeah, and so I was reading down below in the entrepreneurism.
Yeah, it's part. Typical.
Yeah, tripping all over that word. Where they provide. Where mentorship and coaching will be provided.
Particularly super important. Yes.
Yeah. Tell me a little about that. It's how does that pair with the educational programs? Is it entrepreneurism there or is it elsewhere?
It is so important, the mentoring part, honestly. Because in the life's journey so I'm really talking about the women and girls, right? Mm-hmm. When they feel that they are supported, whether it's they go so much further, right? And then so many more doors open. So we've had our mentoring program for years already, and we've had thousands, really thousands of women that has gone through it. And we've got numbers and numbers of testimonials. And we see how their careers and personal lives can improve because of mentoring. Because we really support, we say, we've got your back. And it's okay, how do you learn? How they feel that they're not alone. And the completion rate of any program when you've done with a mentor and without a mentor is not at all the same. I think we've got 99% of completion rate when you've got a mentor compared to when you're just on your own. You think, oh, no, I'll do it again. I'm not good enough. Oh, no. When you're not part of a cohort or of a – so we've got free courses that they can do a self-pacing. That's fine. And many people do it. But many people don't go to the end of it. However, when you are in a cohort and you are in a class, you always have someone to support you. When you're in a group, you feel like you know, more like driven by it. So you've got your class and you've got a mentor. So you say, okay, this is how, so it can also help you go through the steps, give you advice, career advice, and other kinds of advice. So it's been a very successful formula that we've had for years. And so it's important, yeah.
And so 99% completion rate with a mentor, I think that kind of speaks for itself right there.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about the social inclusion program? I wasn't able to quite decipher what that translated into.
So the social inclusion is giving access to those who don't generally have access, mm-hmm. and giving them digital literacy courses for those who don't. And also really specifically going. So we have a center in a favela in Brazil, in a community in Brazil. And they have already learned blockchain. So we worked with Binance Academy as well a couple of years ago, where we trained 1,200 women and girls and boys in Africa, Brazil, etc. And so we gave them this Web3 literacy in these underprivileged places. Is you don't have to be like in a privilege or, you know, rich kind of environment or university. These kids, they don't go to school, many of them. They don't have access because it's too dangerous, because it's all these different things. So we also want to give them access to this latest technology, to Web3, because for us, it's a way for them to break the cycle of violence, of illiteracy, of poverty. It's giving them access to this latest technology. And maybe through this, they will be able to, you know, to come into to give a better future for not only for themselves, but also for their families and the communities around.
And so when I'm looking through the SIP itself, which part would you say connects to the social inclusion program? I'm seeing the global event sponsorships, I don't think it's that one. Maybe in the educational programs where you have the
educational program, yeah.
Okay.
Yes, yeah, so definitely an educational program.
Mm. Okay. All right. Makes sense. And I just want to say in the chat, Tom Voxel said he's also collabed with three very talented women all over the world. And it seems like there's a connection there to women in tech. So Tom Voxel is a really well-known sandbox creator. So I'm happy to see that the collaboration goes much further than just, you know, just the collaboration for Nabiya, but also it seems like y'all are connected with the sandbox. Awesome, Tom. So that's really cool to see. All right. And the next one was events and advocacy activities, which I think was pretty closely aligned with what I'm reading here in the global event sponsorships. So
yes.
Davos, Osaka Summit, and regional and global awards support. Yeah. So I saw we'll get into the sponsorship of the awards category, but can you talk to me a little bit about the Davos, which I saw also that you had just attended when we almost did our interview in Davos?
But I know, but I have a video because we met with Seb a couple of times in Davos, including our Women in Tech Global Council dinner, which was the launch there. As I said, it's important to be where the main conversations with key global stakeholders are taking place. We want to be part of it. We don't want to be at the bottom of the conversation. Once again, it's super important to be on the ground doing the grassroots work, but we have to be where the decisions are being made. And Davos is that place. Davos is so important because not only do we see what the conversations are being shaped, where they're going, but we can be part of them. So I was speaking in the World Economic Forum in this, it was an accredited session together with other like NTT, Microsoft, and SAP, where we announced the Osaka Protocol, which we will be signing in Osaka in April, which is this global framework, policy framework. Well, not policy really, but it's mostly like a commitment framework where public and private sector organizations can commit. Because one thing is, okay, yeah, we pledge to have more women, we pledge to skill. Yes, but we don't want you to pledge, we want you to do. One thing is pledging and saying, yeah, we support, but you do it. Because we all need to say, okay, what can I do to support, right? So we are doing this. So the Osaka Protocol is a way for every single organization to be able to commit to either skilling, either training, either bringing devices or helping in some quantitative way. Like you have to be able to measure and to transform and to report the numbers so that we can impact so many women by 2030. So our original goal was 5 million, which we're so hoping for. But obviously, because we are looking at a much wider global reach with the partners, with this global alliance, we're looking at least 50 million now. So it's going to be scaling. Yes, 50 million. And the sandbox, through our partnership, would also be committing then, okay, the sandbox commits to skill so many people by 2030, et cetera, et cetera. So it's like a real commitment, right? It's not legally binding because we wanted to make it flexible enough for people to commit. They're not going to go to, pay a fine if they don't do it, but you have to really commit. So you know that like you want to do it. And then every year, like every quarter, there's going to be a very transparent reporting system so that we can see where we are at and reach our goal. Because at the end of the day, this is what we want to do.
And that was one of my questions back, was the metrics of it. Like, how are you going to, what were those metrics going to be? How were you going to measure them? And then at what point would we be able to see those metrics, if we were able to see them, so that we could do our own kind of assessment?
Of course.
We're not trying to embarrass anyone, just I'd love to see those results.
I believe in transparency in all the way. And if we, numbers and not just numbers, they really lives impacted. So if they impacted one life or 50 million, this is really what works. So we wanted to be able to put in the Osaka Protocol things that you can count. Literally, like 1, 2, 3, 4. How many girls, women, once again, have been finished this program? How many started? How many finished? How many women found a job? How many did this? How many scholarships were then? How many took that university degree, etc.? So all these things. So it's quite extensive. So we have Osaka Protocol. I can share afterwards for you a link. So we're still like in the draft.
I read the Osaka Protocol and the women.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah, so exactly.
It was inspired by the Kyoto Protocol, I saw.
Exactly. So it's inspired by the Kyoto Protocol in the sense that we want commitments, right? So what do they commit to? And then they have. And then we can count. And then every quarter, or maybe not quarter, sorry, every semester, every half of the year, 6 months, we have the people, the signatories, the ones who have committed to do something, to give us their impact report. And the impact report, we are building right now this platform that's going to be on the blockchain because we want it to be immutable and transparent. And they're going to be saying, okay, I don't know, NTT, they've impacted so much, we've done so much, the numbers. And so we can trace. And we can see, and if we reach 50 million, better, it's wonderful. If we didn't, if we reach more, even better. And if we didn't, why didn't we? We're not there to say, oh, you didn't do this. We say, this is what we aspire to do, and we're putting everything in place to do it. If we didn't, let's look at the reasons. How can we do better? What can we change? And if it worked, great, let's do bigger and better. It's really a way just to measure to keep track. And once again, to be transparent. We believe in in being the credibility comes when you when you deliver and you're transparent about it.
And so I was looking at the commitments, you know, the STEM education and skills. Number two is representation, leadership, and entrepreneurship. Commitment number three was digital access and inclusion. Commitment number four is ethical technology development.
And yeah, so that's the only one, sorry, that we cannot measure as such, because we can say, yes, there are four pledges, so they're the pledges, right? The objectives. Mm-hmm. However, the commitments come to the top, to the first three, because those we can measure. And the fourth one is a pledge to the, yes, we are going to be supporting, you know, ethical development of emerging technologies. However, it's not something that you can measure the impact, just to be clear.
Okay. And so the timeline was, this was originally announced at the World Economic Forum in Davos, which you previously mentioned. And then April 24th of this year is where that official signing and launch of the Osaka Protocol is expected to happen.
The 25th, in fact, yes. It's going to be on the Friday.
Got it. All right. And so inspired by binding, so the Kyoto Protocol had binding commitments where it addresses challenges that women face in digital society. And this Osaka Protocol, there is a pledging commitment framework. And that's where the training and the reporting system that you just mentioned. How does it report on the blockchain?
Good question. This is why we're working with blockchain experts.
We are building it.
Yeah.
And hence the reason. Okay, got it. I guess you're still building it. All right.
We don't want it to be too complicated either. You know, like people, they have to be able to, you know, to give us the, we say what the metrics are, what exactly, what it falls under, and just put it in a dashboard where it can be traceable.
Got it. Okay. So this SIP, in addition to enabling the education in those key markets, the entrepreneurism, the coaching, the mentorship, the social inclusion programs, and the events and advocacy, both at the Osaka Protocol and in Osaka. I mean, it is in Osaka.
Yeah, it's in Osaka.
But also, the last thing I saw was the sponsorship of World and Women category and Women in Tech Global Awards.
Yes, so important, because we want to give visibility to women. And we're seeing right now how women are being erased sometimes, you know, from the work they've been doing. So we want to give visibility to women, those that are doing great things in the space, and have them be ambassadors to have more women, you know, follow their footsteps. So it's a very important thing that we do with the Women in Tech Global Awards. So we've got three reasons for the Global Awards. First, obviously, is to give visibility to women. So many times we go on conferences and most of the experts are men. Nothing against, I love, you know, that they are experts, but I'm sure that we also want to have female experts to lead the way as well. I think there can be a nice balance between both. And sometimes they don't, they people say, well, we can't find them because they're not visible. So it's a way to go reach out, identify the women who are doing remarkable work in that part of tech, you know, in Web3 across the world. And so from the Global Awards, which were the first 4 years were just global, I decided when you look at the finals, the nominees at the end, they were mostly, I don't know, US, Europe, and they didn't really represent the entire world. This is why I decided 3 or 4 years ago to really make regional awards. So there would be LATAM. So we divided the world into 7 different regions. LATAM, Africa, Europe, North America, APEC, Middle East, Caucasus, Central Asia. And then the regional awards, they would do like the preliminary. And then the winners of each one of those go to the global. So that at the end of the day, every single region is represented in every single category. So it's really global. And then, so imagine the way that we can identify all these hundreds of women from around the world and make them be like ambassadors for the industry in their own region. This means that we can really penetrate the market so much deeper and really be true to this grassroots level that we want.
And so the sandbox in this SIP would sponsor women in Web3 category?
Yeah, exactly. Women in Web3.
Okay. find that one on the website, because I've been I'm not able to see it on the website. So maybe it's
Because we've got a couple of websites. It's womenintech-awards.com. And then if you go to the different categories in for the global awards. And also last year we didn't do all the regions, right? So I think it was just the global and perhaps one or two regions that was by the sandbox. So this year what we would like, that's really our wish, is for the sandbox to be able to sponsor all the regions, because then it makes sense.
Oh, I see. Got it. We're talking all the regions.
Yeah, all the regions, including global. If you just do global, but you don't know regions, you know, like you miss out on the events that we do on the ground in the regions, because we really do a world tour. Like it's not online, our events. Our events are, so obviously we can do online, but we go, there's a physical place. So last time we do it in Peru. This year we're going to be doing Panama and the North America. We've been doing Washington, D.C. for the past 2 years. Now we're going to go to Canada. And then from Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan. For the APEC Awards, we're going to Kyoto this year. So we're doing also in Japan. And we're doing it in a bag in the IVS, which is one of Japan's and the region's like largest startup and crypto kind of environment, a conference with thousands of people. So we have a whole vertical just for women in tech, which is not only just the awards, the award ceremony is part, but generally we do like a summit the whole day. So people come, there are panels, there are stands, you know, with representatives. And then the cherry on the top is the awards. It's not just the awards. We do lots of activations also on the ground. Like when you do the Africa Awards, we go to Philippa Village, we go to universities, and we do things around, because if you travel there, it's not just to give the award. Like we do many different things. Mm-hmm. And on top of it, we do the award.
Got it. Okay. And so the other question that we were rolling into was how does the SIPX connects to the sandbox ecosystem? And one of the things that you had responded to me on the forums was that it expands the sandbox's presence at many of these prestigious events. And then it also has a sustainable impact through education. So it meets a lot of our education initiatives as well. Okay, I think that pretty much well speaks for itself now at this point.
So the budget
I saw is 250,000 sand, which is about 140,000 US dollars.
But that was in the beginning, Lanzer. So now talking to the people from the DAO and the community, they suggested that we break it down per, like not like one takes it all, and we break it down by pillar, right? So the first one that we brought it, that's the most urgent because it's the one coming up, is our global summit in Paris. Oh, sorry, not in Paris, in Osaka in April. So this is why we had a SIP just for the Osaka. So that can be done in a quicker way. And the budget then is smaller because just the budget for the Osaka. And then afterwards, we'll do different SIPs for the different parts of it, of, you know, the events, the education, etc.
Got it. So there's global event sponsorship. There's educational programs, which you get about half of it. So very, very consistent with what you've been saying so far about how important education is. Another 40% to the global event sponsorships, which we already discussed. Mm-hmm. And then 20% to the Osaka protocol.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, and no, it's important to see. You know, sometimes we say, yeah, we support. Yeah, but no. Commit to what you're doing, and then
put your money where your mouth is.
Put your money where your mouth, exactly.
Yeah. So then, in the implementation timeline here, we have quarter one, you would launch those event sponsorships, which would be the Osaka coming up. Yeah. Again, academy setup in those initial markets that we talked about, and you said India, Malaysia specifically, but the rest of the key Asian areas that we discussed. Protocol framework finalization, so the Osaka protocol.
Yeah, well, we're working on right now because it's going to be launched signed in Osaka in April. Mm-hmm. So we've already started working with it, you know, during Davos, And then now we're working with the steering committee. And then we're going to be signing it in Osaka.
Mm-hmm. Got it. And then phase two, which will be quarter two, that'll be the protocol, the summit and the signing itself, launching of academies in Japan and Philippines. So you're now expanding in those key markets you were discussing. Mid-year impact assessment. So I assume that would be like the reporting, the metrics that you, right? And then phase three, which will be later on in this year, Singapore, launching in Singapore.
Yes.
Which I know a number of SanFam. So I've had previous guests on, a number of which who are from Singapore. And
you know, I've never been to Singapore, so it's this year I want to go to Singapore.
I bet you Dr. Loretta Chen would love to host you.
Okay.
She's an advisory board member, but she's from Singapore, and I've had her on to discuss her views as an advisory board member. Wonderful person. Also, she has her own studio, so I bet you there's a collaboration there that could happen.
You make the introduction, I'm sure.
Yeah, wonderful person, very much an advocate for many of the things that you've been mentioning so far. So anyways, she from Singapore, regional award events, global award ceremony, and then another impact report. So I'm loving the fact that you've made reporting and kind of showing what it is that you've been doing part of your phasing here. Really.
Yeah, but you have to, not only because I think people want to know what we do, but I think it's also recognition for the work of our teams. Like we're saying, okay, this is what you've done. Look at what you've done. Thank you. Congratulations. You know, we work in a lot with volunteers on the ground. So this is a recognition of their work, you know? So it's important to show.
And I also have, as a program manager myself, I have a love of risk analysis, and your risk analysis has not only identifying what the risk is, like event participation, educational program adoption, protocol implementation, budget management, and those risks that many people, like all of us, we face, the low participation rates, the varying adoptions that across markets, how not every, as we mentioned in the very beginning, not every market looks at that adoption the same way, different pressures and conditions, delayed stakeholder adoptions. Right underneath it, you have all the mitigations that you're going to do, how you're going to do a phased approach with very clear incentives, work with at the local level and customize per the culture and the conditions that you're
working in. This is the most important, because we've got these different levels and we work with the teams on the ground. They are there. So they tell us, yes, we can. No, we can't. We've got holidays here. We've got that. There's a cultural barrier. You should, bridge it this way. We should change the wording. We are there to support and to make it work. And then our teams will tell us how to make it work. And then we'll try different things, because this is how, you know, and because we've got 7 years experience, we have already pretty much tried different things and we've seen what works and what doesn't work. So I think we can learn from our previous mistakes, and well, obviously we're continuous learning, but we're very agile in the sense that we can, you know, quickly pivot to adapt.
Yeah. And hence probably why I'm seeing in your contingency, which contingency just means backup, your backup plan. So that's where, like in your education program, if you had varying adoptions and that risk were to be realized, you have then a flexible curriculum that you would then reapproach with. So maybe you wouldn't have the entirety of the curriculum. You would tailor it to make it a little bit more adopted in that. I'm a big fan of the way you approach these risks. You had your risk, your mitigation, and then what you're going to do about it as your contingency. I loved it. I just thought that was a special note.
Thank you, Lancer.
Awesome. I think we have hit just about everything. The only thing that I wanted to end with was, what was it that led to you writing the SIP? I know you have previous collaborations with SanFam and the Sandbox. Was there something specific where you said Sandbox is definitely the right partner for us on this?
Mm-hmm. Honestly, I've seen how the Sandbox ecosystem, the Sandboxers, the family, the management team as well. And I'm deeply engaged, and I love the vision and the whole, you know, atmosphere. And I think it's authentic. I think the work you guys are doing are great, and I think it really aligns with, we've got similar values. And I'm very happy in the sense that we can, we've got the, how do you say, the luxury of being able to choose the partners we want to work with. You know, it's so hard the way we're doing it. So we don't just want to partner to partner. We want to partner with people and with companies, with communities that have the same way or the same values, the shared mission. So whether it's going to be through the education, whether it's going to be, you know, the Web3. And the only gaming partner we have is Sandbox, because we've identified it as the most valuable, the most authentic, and the most positive environment for our women to be in. And because we've seen the work you've done with the World of Women, because we've already experienced for the past 2 years, now we feel ready. We say, okay, we know that they walk the talk. We feel comfortable, and we want to be a bigger part of it now.
Wow. I'm a supporter. I support what you're doing here. I think there is a definite connection. And it's not the first time that you have been involved in SandFam, so that you're not a new face, even if some people might not have known that you were behind some of these collaborations. Mm-hmm. Very clearly, you've been involved in SandFam before. And Walpax in the chat saying, yep, going to check this out. Great initiative. I agree, Walpax, completely.
Thank you.
So is there anything that you'd like to end with, any sort of final plugs or closing statements?
Honestly, no. I think we've gone through everything. I wanted to say thank you, Lanza, for being such a great supporter from the beginning, for waking up at 5 a.m. your local time to have a chat with me, for being so, once again, positive and warm. And supportive. And this is one of the reasons why we want to be part of this fabulous SandFam, because of people like you and like Seb and others we've had the real chance to work with, to collaborate. And it really emphasizes why we want to do this with the Sandbox.
O prazer é meu.
I'm probably going to butcher this.
O prazer é meu.
O prazer é meu.
O prazer é meu. Ah! Muito pra... O prazer é meu.
O prazer.
Yep,
that was Portuguese, everyone. My very bad Portuguese. Because I think we mentioned the very beginning, Ayumi, you're not from France. Your heritage is Brazilian.
And... Yeah, so I am half Japanese, Ayumi, and I'm quarter Brazilian, a quarter British, but I was born in Brazil, in Rio. And then I grew up in Johannesburg in South Africa. And I've been living in France for many years now.
Grew up in Johannesburg. But you are a very storied background, very diverse background.
Yeah, you know, I grew up during apartheid, yeah. So that's why fighting anything against discrimination is so close to my heart. I have it in my skin. So,
It is your very being. Well, how about that? That has been such a pleasure to have you on, Ayumi. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you
so much.
De nada, de nada. Com prazer. Thank you, Lanza. Thank you, everybody.
Yep. So, everyone, thank you. This is Sandow 58. We had Ayumi from Women in Tech, who's the founder of Women in Tech, an international organization seeking to do a collaboration with the Sandbox to empower women in Web3. It had various elements to it with education, mentorship, coaching, event sponsorships, and we're not talking like we're talking prestigious events and some of the things that will help not only women in tech but also further the goals of Sandbox. So Ayumi, thank you for your time and have a great day.
Have a great day. Thank you. Bye bye.